This is Smashville Live. And Rene takes a long elevated shot. Bouncing. And he scores! Live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Welcome to Smashville Live
on ESPN.
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. Streaming live on Facebook Live, Twitch, YouTube, and thegamenashville.com.
And welcome in to Smashville Live. 102.5, Dave McCabe here with you. Once again, and alongside Lindsey Rowley of Fox Sports Tennessee and Nashville Predators TV, my cohort in the middays, Willie Donick, she keeps him in line on a daily basis. Lindsey, how you doing? Thanks for doing this.
I'm good. I don't think I can take credit for keeping Willie in line. Maybe Crispy, but Willie is pretty straightforward. He keeps it together pretty good.
Well, I think Crispy keeps you all in line because he's the coach, that is for sure. And we say hello to Cliff Ronning, one of the former Predators of the early days, the OGs here with us. Cliff, good to see you. Thanks for taking the time.
Well, thank you. It's always great to be able to talk to the fans of the Predators, that's for sure.
Well, what do you remember about you talk about the fans of the Predators, and we've had other former people, former Predators on this show that, and I remember Thomas Vokoun saying it, of going out and basically saying, hi, I'm a hockey player. We have a hockey team here. And obviously it's very different now, but what do you remember about some of those early days of explaining the game to the city?
Yeah. I mean, it was exciting. I was one of the older players. So, you know, being in Phoenix before that, knowing that people weren't used to hockey, and then going to Nashville where, you know, obviously country music is where it's at. And I was an older player coming in as a role model for the younger guys. And Mr. Poile really focused on getting out in the communities and getting to the grassroots. And I really enjoyed that. I remember me and Fitzgerald putting on road hockey games and just getting to know the people in Nashville. And I think that's something why the fans are such strong fans, is because the team reached out early on.
Yeah, and you mentioned David Poile, and just as we talk about the architect of building it, of, okay, so how do you go about it? You have nothing to work with. You have to go through an expansion draft, and then obviously you want to try and be as competitive as possible early on while also building several steps down the road. And he was able to do that, and I know you had left the team by the time they made the playoffs for the first time, but he was able to do it all relatively fast.
He did. And I think the biggest thing was, you know, when I talked to him early on, he just wanted effort. He wanted to show the people that we were the hardest working team. People knew sports, knew that we didn't have the talent of some of these other teams, but he gave opportunities to a lot of players that really were just starting out, like the Krebo Kraftsoffs that had some skill, and Shellbergs. So there was, and we always had good goaltending in Nashville. So we really, you know, we forced ourselves to be hardworking players and give it everything we had. And that's what the fans enjoyed the most.
Lindsey?
Well, I was just going to talk about being a player from back in the day. I'm sure everything that the guys are going through right now. Can you imagine having to be a professional hockey player and do what you were doing back then, but through a pandemic, no fans in the stands?
Yeah, the one thing about hockey players, I'll definitely speak for them. They're very mentally tough, and they're down to earth. And I think it's something that they really realize it's very important, not only to give back to the game, but when you're in a situation like this, you're always going to be getting roadblocks. I mean, I was a 5'7" hockey player that wasn't supposed to play. I was too small. Then I was too old. And there's always something in front of you. So for the players, the Predators, you know, they're having some injuries, guys coming down with, I guess, possible COVID or what have you. There's obstacles, but with obstacles, there's opportunity for the other players to step it up and show that they belong to be at that next level. So, you know, NHL is at such a high level of sport that opportunity for players is everything. And sometimes your opportunity is like 3, 4, 5 games, and you got to make the best of it. You got to show what you can do.
Well, I know one of the things I like to ask a lot of the players now is, especially on the Predators team, like looking back at your experience, who was maybe one of your favorite guys to play with? Not necessarily because of his skill on the ice, but maybe he was, you know, the clown in the locker room or something like that. Who was one of your favorites?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty obvious. I mean, Scotty Walker, he came from, you know, the minors and fought his way to where he got. And I don't think anyone ever thought he was going to score over 30 goals, but he did. Not just that and fight, but he would stick up for you as a smaller player. Any of his players, he would look after. He wasn't that big, but that's one thing that he did. He stuck up for everyone. And Tom Fitzgerald was a fabulous captain. He made everyone feel a part of it. You know, if a guy only had 5 shifts to 30 shifts, everyone felt like they were a big part of it. And I think that's something that of all the teams I ever played for, the Predators really make the players feel they're a part of it, regardless if you're on the first line, second line, or you're sitting out. So I'm hoping they're still having that attitude, because that was a very special place to play.
Well, and you talk about Tom Fitzgerald. How about now that he's gone into front office mode of being a general manager? He's gone from a player. He's coached. We've seen that. And now being a GM, how cool is it for you to see one of your former teammates doing that?
I mean, he could have been a coach, because he was not only during the games telling everyone where to be or what to do. No, I'm just kidding. He was that kind of a guy who was a leader. Fitzy was a very fair person in the locker room and gave everyone a chance. And I think as a captain, it's hard to – sometimes he gave up his game so other guys could play better. He was so worried about how other guys were playing that sometimes – possibly that hurt him, but he didn't care. That was very important for him to be that leader. And I think obviously David Poile saw that in him, and now he's doing great. And it's when you look back as a player, it's great to see other guys being successful, in that GM role or coaching role.
Lindsay?
One of the things also I was wondering about is, you know, we hear a lot of the guys talking about going on the road right now and how much of a struggle it is. How much do you feel like the guys are maybe missing out with thinking back on your time, being able to go on the road and just have those dinners and spend that extra time getting to know your teammates? Whereas the guys today really can't do that on the road. They stay in their hotel rooms for the most part.
Yeah. When I first started playing, it was totally different. We would be all excited that we're going to be staying overnight in Los Angeles when I was a young 19, 20 year old. And then slowly it developed into all of a sudden the teams would fly right away out of the cities and get the guys home. And now with COVID and the restrictions, it must be very difficult. I've even heard in meetings, they have to be so far apart, and it's just a really strange for I think all the teams right now, but everyone has to do it, so you just have to find a way to develop your team as best you can and get everyone on the same same plan of how to win the game for sure.
Cliff Ronning is our guest here on Smashville Live. Sean Henry will join us at the bottom of the hour. Chase McCabe, Lindsay Rally. So if I have this right, the first year of the Predators, 98-99, you played 7 games with the Coyotes before you came here. Is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
So what was your first conversation with Barry Trotz like?
Actually, Barry Trotz made it really easy on me. I was actually playing pretty well with the Coyotes. And I think what happened is they came into a situation they had to dump some salary. And I happened to be the guy. So, I mean, I think I had 7 points in the first 7 games or something with them. But we enjoyed Phoenix. My daughter lives there right now. But coming to Nashville and then being with Barry Trotz was very humbling. Like he right away said, hey, I really enjoyed watching you play. Of all the coaches, I've had some great coaches. He's definitely in the top 3 for sure. Just, he's completely honest And I remember one conversation once, he thought I was slowing down a little bit, telling me, you know, hey, you got to make sure that you start working out afterwards. And he was right. He's straightforward that sometimes you can slip your game a slip. And when it comes from Barry Trotz, he's doing it from the goodness of his heart. And he helped me, you know, keep my career going for a while.
Well, Cliff, yeah. I always think it's interesting to talk to, especially guys who played in the earlier years of the Predators, because obviously I never got to work with you, but being a member of the media and especially the Predators media, I know sometimes like players do not want to talk to the media. And I always feel bad, you know, after a loss or whatever it may be. Were you one of those guys? Did you just dread talking to the media or did you enjoy it?
I think I always stood up to talk to them and told the truth. I think that's just my nature. I look back and I think these young kids, you know, maybe someone like myself should talk to them because they don't realize how a big of a stage it is and they can build their character for later down the road after they do stop playing or that character might help them get another contract. Scotty Walker was a great example. I mean, he was a great interview and it was important to get your personality out. And I think some of the kids don't understand that that's part of it. It can actually, you can get an extra couple years for just being good on camera and getting to the right facts and being honest when the media comes in. And I mean, back in my day in Vancouver, when I was a young kid watching, there was a player named Tiger Williams and he got third star one game and came out with a giant rubberized 4 foot cowboy hat. And he just became a fan favorite. He wasn't a very good hockey player, but he was a fan favorite. So I think it's important for the players to get out in the media and say the right things, but also just be themselves.
He is Cliff Ronning here with us on Smashville Live. We'll come back with more and tell some stories about the early days of the Nashville Predators. And again, Sean Henry, the president and CEO, joining us at the bottom of the hour. Chase McCabe, Lindsay Rally here on Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine of Bellevue, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is Smashville Live.
It is Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, and we are streaming on the Game Nashville app. We're also on Twitch, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all of those things. You can watch the show. You can listen online as well. Chase McCabe, Lindsay Rally, and Cliff Ronning here with us, our guests for the first half of the show. And we'll talk to Sean Henry, the president and CEO, as well a little later on in the show. So, Cliff, we were telling some stories of the early days, and one thing that I wanted to bring up, Lindsay, of course, works on the TV side for Fox Sports Tennessee, and that aspect has changed quite a bit. Pete Weber and Terry Crisp have talked about the early days of not every game was televised, and I know radio, which is what we do, obviously, it was on different stations, and now you know where to find the team, and the exposure is there, and I know that that was different and difficult for some of you guys that had played in bigger markets.
Yeah, absolutely. Now every game, you know, you got the NHL network up here in Vancouver. I watch 4 or 5 games. They start at 4 o'clock. So it's a big advantage, you know, even for pre-scouting for some of these teams possibly, but you know, some of our games weren't televised early on in Nashville. I just think hockey's gotten popular. Hockey is something that people enjoy watching. It's fast. It's rough. It's got everything. And that's what the best part about it is. And once they get the fans back in the seats, I think it's just going to skyrocket. The league's only going to get even better.
Well, Cliff, as far as television goes, back when you were playing, on a daily basis, I am keeping Terry Crisp under control at the television desk, but I know it was around, and of course you have to keep it clean, but do you have any good Crispy stories, or how much interaction did you have with Pete and Crispy?
You know, with Crispy, he was around the team and he was always positive because he knew, I mean, he knows the game. He's been around it at the highest levels and he knew on paper when I played there, our team was not the best, but he loved that we gave it everything we had. And then when we did get fortunate and things went well and our goalie stopped 45 saves, either Dunham or Volkoon, we'd win hockey games and it was fun. And, you know, we had really good character, really good people. Johnson and it was sad what happened to him, but he had some brilliant games for us. Barahowski, you know, he looked good in warm up. So we had, there was a whole section of the female crowd would be all watching him in warm up with his hair flowing. Sebastian Bordalo, you know, he could fly around, and there was a lot of good character players. We were a fun team to be proud of because the effort was there.
Cliff Ryan here with us. So you gotta let the listeners know your nickname is the Rat. Where did that come
from? I constantly was pecking away trying to get the puck from people and constantly hacking. And, you know, when someone did something to me, I would just swing back at them. And then, you know, one game, I believe it was someone in the front office decided, man, he plays like he's a rat after that puck, or after the puck's like cheese. So all of a sudden, I remember at one of the games on the Giant, the scoreboard, all of a sudden there's the Rat. And then that's kind of when it started. So every time I scored a goal, I think they did up on the board, a piece of cheese and the Rat chasing it and then getting to it. So it was kind of, it was comical, and it was fun. I mean, just being called the Rat means you're doing something right, to me anyways, on the ice.
I feel like it's different now because, you know, the nicknames are all always kind of a play on the name, you know, a play, yeah. But you don't see as many like that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, you just add EY or something on someone's name and that's their new nickname. But I mean, you look back in the day when Boom Boom Jeffrey on, these are classics. Mm-hmm. So maybe we can start getting some of the Preds with some good ones.
I know they've been talking about the Stash Brothers as far as Philip and Ellie Tolman and Go. So still playing been one of their features, but we'll see. I'll be interested to see if either of them come, you know, see later in the season, especially if the Predators find themselves in a playoff picture, if they get shaved or if they get longer or what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, Lanny McDonald played an extra 3 years because he had that great mustache. And, I mean, I play still some hockey with our alumni up here. And Dave Babich had a famous mustache. And when he takes it off, no one talks to him. And when he has it on, he's like everyone wants to talk to him and get him on TV. And he's doing TV commercials having that mustache. So it's a good brand, I think, for a lot of those guys. They should keep it.
So, Cliff, so what are you doing now? Now that you're, you know, your hockey career has been over, or your playing career has been over for, what are you doing now?
Well, I mean, you know, I still have one daughter in grade 12. I became a grandfather. I'm very proud of that. So I'm parenting, I guess you'd say, but I also have a company called Base Hockey, and we just actually opened a place called Base Hockey Alley. And what that is a place to teach the youth how to shoot a puck properly using high speed video. So we're really enjoying that. And that's something I'm doing out here to help out from time to time. And I'm actually going on the ice tonight with the Pee Wee A team doing skills. And my son and Dante Fabro, Matthew Barzell, they played on the same team growing up. And I'm going to the Burnaby Winter Club to teach kids for an hour tonight doing skills. So I just can't, I guess, how do you say, get rid of the game, because the game's just a part of, it's just a part of me. I love it.
Oh, that is fantastic. And you mentioned that of like you coaching and helping the kids. I mean, one thing that wasn't around when you played here that is very prominent now, the Ford Ice Centers and the fact that there are more sheets of ice in Nashville and that you have youth hockey that's grown so much and the former Predators are involved. JP Dumont's coaching like three different teams and winning championships. And just how cool is that to see from afar of Nashville has not only become an NHL city, but it's growing the game on the ground with the Ford Ice Centers.
I just think it's fabulous. And I know like JP Dumont has really done an amazing job there. And what I'm more excited about is that I guess whoever's involved in picking the guys – that actually can start running stuff like that, JP Dumont's the perfect choice because he's teaching high-end hockey. And also, he's able to get out to the, maybe the kids that aren't so, I guess, haven't played as much. And they build it that way also. And it's not just boys. Girls hockey is becoming huge. So it's just a great thing that the Predators have done. And JP Dumont's the perfect choice.
Lindsay?
Cliff, you mentioned tonight you're going to teach some youth hockey and things like that. How rewarding is that for you to be able to give back to the community and be able to teach some of the youngsters some skills?
I mean, it's fun. It gives me life. It gives me energy. It really feels weird, though, going back to a rink that I played 45 years ago. It's changed a little bit. It's a little bit nicer. I mean, there's a lot of players that come out of Bernie Winter Club, but it's something that it's still got a little bit of pride. I'm 55 and I really enjoy talking to the kids and trying to teach them. One thing I've learned, the kids are a little bit more not as focused, and the ones that are focused seem to do much better. I think they're focused on going to play video games a little more, but for the most part, they're pretty intense and it's a lot of fun.
Well, that is awesome. And it's a lot of fun to be able to catch up with you. And hopefully when things return to normal, because I know you do make appearances here in Smashville from time to time, it'll be good to have you back at Bridgestone Arena, whether it's for an alumni night or an appearance or a game, who knows. But we look forward to seeing you in the flesh sometime soon.
Well, I've always enjoyed myself when I've gone there, and I look forward to getting back down there once all this craziness is gone. And actually, my one daughter that's still in school, her ambition's to go to Belmont. So it's like it's starting all over again, I guess. I don't know. But if that's what she wants to do and works hard for it, I don't want to stop her.
Absolutely.
Well, you're always welcome on our show too, Cliff.
There we go.
Crispy.
Well, thank you.
He is Cliff Ronning, former Predator legend, joining us here tonight on Smashville Live, and we appreciate it. It's Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators, is going to join us here in just a few minutes. But also keep watching and pay attention, because you will see a keyword flash up on the screen. When you see that, text it to 615-737-1025, and you'll have a chance to be in the building tomorrow night to watch the Predators and the Panthers. Stick around. More Smashville Live coming up next, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling on ESPN 1025 The Game.
Smashville Live.
The Game. Streaming on the Game Nashville app. You can also watch on Twitch and YouTube, Facebook, Twitter as well. All brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. And remember, pay attention, because you will, if you're watching, you will see a keyword pop up on your screen. You text that in to 615-737-1025, and you have a chance to be in the building tomorrow night to watch the Predators live and in person. Chase McCabe, Lindsay Rowley here with you, and we say hello to the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators. Sean Henry is here with us tonight. Sean, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I hope my mom wrote that phone number down so she can text in. Love to get her in the building. So good luck, Mom.
That's the only way these days. Not the only way, but it is obviously different. And so let's start with that. How has the process been going as you all have let fans in and season ticket holders have been able to come in and purchase tickets, and also have sold some to the general public as well? It's a process. Everybody's ready to just snap their fingers and be back to normal, but how has it gone so far?
I think it's gone pretty well. You know, the passion of our fans is incredible, but it's not just for our sports, for the city as well. So when we announced what we were doing, of course, everyone was disappointed that we were going to have 17,159 people in, but people understood, they got it. I mean, the emails we got were so supportive, and I don't know why it shocked me, because I really thought it was going to be more, my gosh, what's wrong with you? You can have fans in the building, get them in today. Because as you know, we delayed it a few games because we wanted to work on protocols. And then each game, we added a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And then also changed a lot. Every day was a learning curve. And our fans were just tremendous, are tremendous. They give good feedback. They roll with the changes. I mean, you look at your setup alone, Lindsay, we probably changed it more during the game, the very first game, than we did the week after. But every day was a little bit different. And that's why I'm just thankful to our staff and our league and really everybody for rolling through everything. So it's been nice to gradually get that number up. The coolest part, though, is, you know, with only 2,000 people, 2,700 people in the building, whatever it may be, it's as loud as most buildings have when they have 12, 15, 20,000 people. And it really is a neat thing. I hated the piped in sound that we were forced to do. And I kept saying, we don't need it. Like, we could have 500 people and we don't need it. That's proven out. So it's been really, really nice to be back. And you guys have both been in there. The energy level really is incredible.
Yeah, it's so weird. And like, if I ever get around to writing a book about my career, I mean, there will definitely be a chapter or several on 2020 and 2021. But one of the first things that kind of hit me was when I was in that first game with no fans and we were all there and doing our jobs, what it sounds like at full capacity in the playoffs where your ears are ringing afterwards and then hearing the piped in crowd noise. I mean, it's just weird. It's crazy. That was something that with what we do that actually happened, but it did. And as you mentioned, it's a process and you guys have done a great job with it.
Well, it's funny. The number one complaint we got was about the piped in noise for the few people that were in the venue and for those that were at home. And it was funny. I was talking to Herb and Barbara Fritch, who are such passionate fans. I said, why are we doing that? It's awful. I hate it. We all did. But again, every building is a little bit different. You know, most buildings have zero fans in it. So maybe it's needed a little bit to cover up some sounds that you might not want to get out on the broadcast, you know, and have poor Bob Cole ready with his trigger finger to, you know, bleep something out. Well, not from our team, but maybe from some of those visiting teams.
Lindsay.
Well, Chase, I mean, you mentioned about it being, you know, odd with only 500, however many fans were allowed in. Man, try doing a game, an away game from in there. I'm used to a packed, bumping Bridgestone Arena. And when there's no fans for an away game, you got like Crispy and Hal yelling back and forth and echoing through the arena. It's ridiculous. But anyway, Sean, you touched upon COVID and the pandemic a year ago, and obviously the tornadoes and everything that Nashville has been through in the last year. And I know all of us in the organization were remote for a long time. We had the all Smashville calls that we all looked forward to. But going back to when the pandemic initially hit, how proud are you of the way that this organization has really come together over the last year? And now we're sitting here, thank goodness, with fans in the stands and in the middle of a hockey season.
Yeah. And yeah, I was writing an email to our ownership group a little while ago and talking about a lot of things, but one of them was reflecting back a year ago, we woke up to the devastation of tornadoes. And Smashville did what Smashville does, right? Neighbor helping neighbor, stranger helping stranger. You know, we recovered and mourned and did what we were supposed to do. And then just less than 2 weeks later, you know, we were sitting there from Wednesday night for the SEC tournament. We shut that down. We take a pause of the season. And if you remember, we got together, I think on that Thursday or Friday with all of our staff. And we didn't know what to think. We didn't know what to do. But the one thing we all promised each other and committed to each other was we're going to get through it together. We're going to be transparent. We're going to share what's going on as much as we know. And we had a joint commitment to come out of it stronger than we went into it. Now, that was easy to say when we thought it was 3 weeks, 4 weeks, or 5 weeks. Look how naive we all were. But a year later, and we are in a stronger position than we were from a relationship standpoint. You know, we've built deeper and bigger bonds with so many people on our season ticket front, to our partners, both business and community, with the city, with the state, with other teams. And it really has been rewarding. And you're waiting for that negative surprise to come from someone on your staff. It just hasn't been there. I mean, there have been so many positive, uplifting stories. You know, people are learning another language. People are learning how to drive the Zamboni. People have never picked up a paintbrush in their life or painting parts of the building. And it really has been rewarding to see how everyone's bonded together, take on a common cause of getting this organization through it. And it allowed us to do things that other organizations didn't do. And it's something when the Nashville Predators are the leaders in how to act and how to behave on so many fronts, where maybe 10, 12, 15 years ago, if we said that, people would have laughed, you know, when the organization was struggling, if you will, to get to 14,000 fans or whatever the numbers were, where today, you know, we have a chance to work with the league and set the standard on how to return to play. And it's humbling. I mean, you ask me how I feel in a very long, drawn out, rambling way. I did a bad job of saying it. It really is humbling, and it's almost emotional to realize we have 300 people that really, really care about each other and care about this franchise, and more importantly, care about the community.
Well, you mentioned emotional. How, you got to be honest, how, because I know how I feel about it. How excited are you for that day when it comes and we sell out Bridgestone Arena and you got, you know, the chants going on, the cheers, the everything going on? Because I can't wait.
You know, I'm almost embarrassed. You know, I do a lot of interviews and I work with a lot of younger people in college and high school. And one of the questions I always ask, what's your favorite thing about your job? And I tell them when doors open, I don't care what the event is, whether, you know, a small concert or game seven of a playoff round, 5 o'clock, 5:30, 6 o'clock. I love it. The energy bursts through the doors. But I have so undersold that over the years, as much as I thought I loved it. Like you just said, I miss it more than you can imagine. I miss high-fiving people, having conversations about people's grandkids or someone's first game or the memory. Or, you know, it was like the Santa Maria's the other day celebrated their 10th anniversary. How much better would that have been if we had 17,000 people around them, you know, celebrating it? But it'll come. But I'm with you. We will all celebrate that day bigger and better than we will almost anything else because we all know how special it was. And let's face it, we probably didn't realize how special it was when we lived in the moment where we all miss the most simple things right now. And people are going through much bigger tragedy than missing, you know, hugging a stranger or all those things. But let's face it, what drives communities through tough times a lot of times is that joint celebration that sports bring about. So it's going to be awesome. Again, slightly long answer to a very simple question. The next day I'm doing like a deposition. Yes or no? Just the facts, Sean.
No, I like it. And I can't wait for that day either. I was going to run this by you, but I'll just do it in front of everybody. I would like to be able to hype the crowd up that night, you know, give me a live microphone and get everybody going. If you're cool with that, I think that would be great.
You know what? I think we found someone better than you. The running back for the New Orleans Saints has proven his passion and love for the Predators. I don't know if you saw him snowboarding in his new adopted state home of Montana. But I think we found a pretty big, literally a big hype man and a figuratively very big fan. Because if he can cut it up on the slopes on a board that way, let's get him on skates and put him in the crease with you waving a flag, okay?
If he's not available, I will gladly play second fiddle.
Sorry machine, man. So,
you mentioned real quick before we go to the break the tornado and the things that you guys did. It's hard to believe it was a year ago. And we talked about it earlier. Darren McFarland and I left Bridgestone Arena that night, like so many of us did. The Preds had a game, knew the weather was going to be bad, going to be rocky, but you never think that what happened is going to happen. And I didn't sleep that night. I watched the coverage and it came over my house. So I'm, you know, freaking out with the dog, like, is it going to hit here? But you mentioned the community and everything, but what do you remember about waking up that morning and coming to and realizing what has happened and what has transpired?
Oh, it was sickening, right? I mean, it truly, it's hard to express the amount of emotions we've all felt the past 12 months. But again, a year ago, I don't care how close you were or weren't to the situation. Everybody knew someone that they weren't in touch with yet. And there's a sense of panic and dread as you try to figure that out. And we all, again, different stories, but for me, once I knew my son was safe, the immediate desire to do something was moving. I mean, every one of our staff members, okay, what do we do? And we literally had no idea what we could do, except if you remember, we just kicked our doors open and started cooking. You know, we had coffee going the whole time, soft drinks going, water is going, had chargers going for people to just come on in. And then we started delivering some food to first responders. Then we had people wandering off the streets just to grab burgers, pizza. It was really neat to see how everyone just came in and say, what can we do? And even the better part is it's true testament to what we created. People were looking towards us saying, hey, what are you going to do? Because they're used to, you know, the Preds kind of stepping in. And in the immediacy of it, there wasn't a lot any of us could do in that first day because, you know, it wasn't safe, you know, for a lot of people to go in the affected areas. So it was more, let's figure it out. And then we all just mobilized and it, to a person without exception from our players, our coaching staff, our broadcasters, every staff member in between, somebody was doing something, whether with a shovel or a chainsaw or a truck or just delivering supplies. It really was amazing. And we did what we naturally do. We use our games to help raise some money, bring attention, you know, do collection drives. And then unfortunately that shut down just, you know, 10, 12 days later. So we couldn't do what we normally do. But to me, the most immediate memory was everyone saying, just like Christmas morning, what can we do? And there was this rush to do something. Let's take action for our neighbors. And we all live in an amazing place. And it's so nice when things are tough, how brightly we shine.
He is Sean Henry, the president and CEO of the Nashville Predators. When we come back, there is a big event coming to our city that Bridgestone Arena is going to be hosting. We will discuss that when we return here on Smashville Live. It's all presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Red Spirits and Wine of Bellevue and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
This is Smashville Live.
ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming everywhere on the Game Nashville app, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, Facebook as well.
Chase McCabe, Lindsey Rowley, and the president and CEO Sean Henry of the Nashville Predators. And I mentioned,
wait, hang on, time out, man. Who's in charge of the music?
That
would be the Wonder Years. Come on, Ryan.
Well, we'll blame Ryan, but it was Max Herz on the one. Oh.
I'm sorry, Max. It's good. Good choice.
The SEC tournament coming to our city next week. And I remember your press conference that you did when the COVID stuff all started during the SEC tournament. I remember walking on the court, looking around, going, well, this is something. This is something that I never thought that I would experience. But it went from the tournament starts, no fans, to it's done. All last year, and that's when the sports world stopped and the world stopped, I should say. Now it's going to be here, and you guys are going to be able to have some fans, 20%. I know that has to feel good a year later to at least start to inch back closer.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. There's almost something lyrical to it that, you know, the last event we were trying to host is now the first non-Preds game we're hosting. That, as the mayor said the other day, it really marks what we all hope is a series of evolution of opening up a little bit more and a little bit more and to return to normalcy. But you just got to thank the leadership of Greg Sankey. You know, he's become a pretty good friend, a good SUNY guy like me, State University of New York. Neither one of us have ever met anyone outside of New York that went there. But we've really, you know, hit it off 10 years, 12 years ago, whenever we first met. Obviously it resulted in SECs until time ends in Smashville. But his leadership a year ago, you know, a week before the tournament even started, when we started talking about, you know, there's this thing out there, what are we doing? Do we change our protocols, where we're going to be? He was so dedicated to staying hourly communication with us. Most people don't do that. And we've been doing that, I think, ever since. I never thought I'd talk to him almost every week for a year straight, but he was so dedicated to make sure we can host this, if at all possible, right here in where it should be, in Nashville, that we're thankful for it. Because, you know, a lot of other tournaments are not happening where they normally would. And he was so dedicated to using sports to push communities forward. If it weren't for Greg Sankey, there was not a fall football season in college sports, yeah. Period. If another commissioner is listening, you should send 10% of your check to Greg, because he is the one that worked diligently, tirelessly every day to do it and do it safely. And they sure did. And again, we're hosting this tournament because of his vision and his leadership, and the fact that all 14 member schools buy into what he's doing. So I'm thankful to him. Can you imagine what this week would be like if the SEC tournament was being played in any other city? It doesn't matter, because it's ours and our city needs these events. You know, we just made the announcement about the CMA festival not taking place this year. And that's tough. We can't have more of those. So the fact that he chose to have the event, despite the sheer expenses of still doing it with only, you know, 20% of the fans, we all owe him. We really, really do. And it's he really is an amazing guy.
Seen him several times at some Preds games. So gotten to know him as well over the years. So I echo everything that you just said. All right.
And
so
he's a Preds fan, first and foremost. That's another good quality of his.
I have a lighthearted question, because I've said this a few times on the show of the president. That is your Twitter handle. Where did that come from? Because it's obviously easy to put Preds and president, but What made you think, hey, I'm going to do this and make this my thing?
You know, I appreciate you insulting me because it was not that easy or apparent to me, but I was talking to J.R. Lind, and, you know, J.R. is one of the brightest guys we all know. And he said, are you on Twitter? I was like, well, I have a handle, but I don't even look at it. He said, well, you should check it out. So I started looking at it, called him back, said, are you on it now? And I was very original. My name was Sean Henry Preds, I think, or something like that. And he said, no, but you're going to be president, right? I said, I'm sorry, what is that? He said, don't you get it? Do you understand? And he literally had to dumb it down and slow it down for me. So it wasn't that apparent to me, Chase, but it was to JR. So every tweet I send him a penny. So I've been tweeting lately. It's getting expensive.
Lindsay?
Well, so on that same note, Sean, I feel like the Predators social media has just gotten better and better, especially working with Fox Sports Tennessee and with our television broadcasts and things like that. How proud are you of the Predators social media platform, not just on Twitter, but in general?
I really am. And a lot of credit goes to you and all of our broadcasters that add a different dimension, you know, to why people are tuning in and the interlacing of all the Pred accounts, if you will. It's pretty neat. I mean, other teams try to follow what we're doing. So many just drive it through the main handle, which is great. But it's nice to have, you know, the food and beverage account, the merchandise account, obviously the Preds, Bridgestone Arena, some fun ones. All of our broadcasts are showing some unique personality and then how they come in and out of each other across all mediums. And it really is a cool way to enjoy the game. We talk about second screen, second screen, second screen. But we've all been experiencing before we knew what the term is. And I think it's just getting better and better, you know, how you enjoy a game, how you interact with people, especially now that we're not sitting with them. So I think, thank goodness social media came about when it did and really evolved to where we are now, because you can feel like you're sitting with some people from time to time, maybe too closely, because sometimes Twitter is not that nice, as I've discovered. But for the most part, it really is wonderful. So I just really a shout out to you and all your colleagues for making it so much fun. I mean, I don't know what, you know, Chris and Hal are doing. They're wasting their careers by playing hockey and being broadcasters, because they should be running their own social media business and advising people on it.
Oh, you took the words out of my mouth. I was just going to say, I'm trying as hard as I can to keep up with Mason and Hal, but their brains just work differently.
They really are. And you know, I look at it and think, I can't tweet this because they're going to tweet something better. And then when you finally get the confidence to do it, then they destroy you with something so much funnier and over the top.
I'll tell you who
is killing me.
Who's hilarious on Twitter is Nash. Yeah. That cracks me up.
Nash, yeah, I keep up with him too.
And, you know, not only that, try to tweet just with this.
I know.
Blown up, man. That's hard.
That is what's impressive. You mentioned Twitter, and obviously there are times where I just have to close the screen or log off because of how people get. But what I have seen, not learned, but what I guess has been reiterated to me as of late, and you know, everybody wants to win every game. That's passion, and that's being a sports fan. But to put it bluntly, the give a damn of this fan base now is impressive to see where it has come and where it used to be of having that, you know, why can't we win every game? So looking at things from the glass half full, as I like to do, and you're a fan too, you have to appreciate the passion of this fan base.
I like that every single person in our market expects us to win every face-off, every shift, every period, every metric, and then, of course, every game, and is angry when we don't. Because that shows what a great market we are. That shows how passionate our fans are, how informed they are, what a great hockey market it is. And, you know, when I got here, we were a very good team. But if we lost a game, people would be like, gosh, you played that one close. And it's just so much fun to hear that same person say not such nice things to me when we don't win. Or the best one I got, when we beat the Red Wings last week, that same person I'm speaking about, so if he's listening, I won't say his name, but he wrote me the nastiest email, and I was laughing. I wrote back to him. I said, this is so much better than what you used to send me. We won the game. And he wrote, you barely beat the Red Wings. How pathetic is that? Which is so great that people don't expect us just to win. We're going for style points. And I like that we created that. I like that we built that together. And, you know, people want instant reaction. People want to know what we're doing tomorrow and have us tell them today. Obviously, that can't happen. It's not a smart thing to happen. But I love that it's insatiable, and I love that people want it, because I would take it no other way. It would be a lot worse if, you know, people didn't care and they weren't upset and they weren't angry after every loss. And it's a great place to be. It really is.
Well, Sean, we appreciate it as always. Unfortunately, already out of time, but it's good to catch up with you. Good to see you and seeing you around the rink some, which is nice, but always appreciate you coming on Smashville Live and talking to the people.
Well, thank you both. One, for hosting it. More importantly, inviting me on. You know, I see the lineups every week, and they're always so awesome. I'm thinking, oh, they must have had a lot of cancellations this week if I snuck in.
So. Oh, no.
Never, never. Good to catch up with you. And Lindsay, appreciate you hanging out tonight as well. That is going to do it for this edition of Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Reds Spirits and Wine of Bellevue, and Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Stick around, though. Slapshot Radio, that is all next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.